Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for February the 10th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, hello, David. Good evening, everybody. And our special guest tonight is Lauren Price of the group called Veteran Warriors. She's here to discuss the issue of toxic contamination from open-air burn pits used by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan during those wars, and how so many veterans have been affected with cancer and various other illnesses. First, though, I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, and your questions. So please call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Let's hear from you tonight. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Let me introduce our special guest. Lauren Price, as Richard said, is the founder of Veteran Warriors, a national veterans advocacy group, and she has led that organization since its creation in 2009. She has testified before Congress on veteran issues. As far as her career training and experience, she graduated from Omega Institute in New Jersey with a paralegal certification in 1987. She also has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice with a minor in psychology from St. Leo University. She has more than two decades of experience in the legal profession. Of particular significance to our discussion tonight on this show, she served in the United States Navy for a decade between January 2005 and January 2015, including serving for more than a year in Iraq as a convoy driver, as well as a public affairs officer in Baghdad. She also served as the Intel and Logistics Lead Petty Officer at the Defense Logistics Agency, United States Central Command. She co-founded a veterans group called Veterans Warriors with her husband, Jim Price, who is a retired Navy Senior Chief. Military service is a proud tradition in her family, with four of her five sons having served in the military as well. She is our guest tonight on the Veterans News Hour to talk about the issue of toxic contamination caused by the military's use of open-air burn pits and the effects on many veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan war. So let's welcome Lauren Price to the Veterans News Hour. How are you doing, Lauren?
Just great. Thanks for asking us to be back on, David and Richard. I appreciate it.
Well, it's our privilege. I know we have a lot to discuss with you tonight, but for the benefit of our listeners, listeners that may not have tuned in to some of our prior shows where you were our guest, if we could begin with your experience serving in the Navy, including more than a year in Iraq, what was that like? What was your own personal experience with these open-air burn pits?
Well, like most people that, well, everybody that served in either conflict, including currently, as well as locations like Djibouti and Kuwait and Syria, there's open-air burn pits, and they're used because we're walking into or arriving into combat zones, places where the infrastructure is gone, and we have to get rid of our waste. It's just a fact of life. Unfortunately, despite the fact that there are regulations in place and have been there were cursory ones up until 2009. The U.S. Central Command issued a more specific ones, but yet none of them were followed. So we're still open-air burning, and everything goes in it. And most of your listeners will be more concerned if they hear there's, and I'm talking about things like medical waste. People get very nervous when they hear that, when actually that's one of the least things that was put in there. Least dangerous, least quantity. The more toxic things are the styrofoam food containers, the water bottles, any piece of military equipment, screws, nuts, bolts, broken fenders, anything, because that's painted with a corrosive resistant paint that is highly, highly carcinogenic when it's burned. All these things go into the pits. There's no monitoring. There's nothing happening with the where the gas comes off, and there's gases actually being created that didn't exist before because of the different combinations.
And what were they using to get these fires going and continuing? What were the
Go ahead. That's the most beautiful part. They tell us here in the United States, don't use gasoline to ever light a fire because, you know, you could kill yourself. Well, no, we use jet fuel over there, jet fuel to light and to maintain the ignition on these fires. We also have, it's difficult to make tires burn, so to make sure that they burned, they'd use JP4 and JP8. That way, they would be 100% sure that they could get a really nice bonfire going with a bunch of tires. Anybody that's ever smelled a tire knows that this is not a good thing. But that's, to this day, we're still getting reports from overseas our fellow service members still have confidence enough in us to make sure that we're getting the story out, that they're sending us pictures and live video, that they're still using these, despite all the publicity about how bad this is.
Now, Lauren, how large were some of the largest, like how many acres or football field sizes were some of the largest of these open burn pits?
Well, Balad Air Base was, from all accounts, the equivalent of 40 acres of a burn pit.
Wow.
One of the few places I didn't ever get to while I was over there was Balad. Camp Victory, which was part of the Victory Base complex, part of that 40-square-mile complex was Camp Trash Can, and that was the burn pit waste disposal for Camp Victory, Camp Liberty, and all the small slobs that were all connected. And I lived a quarter of a mile away from that. And that facility's burn pit was probably the size of a professional football stadium. And that's actually, shortly after I got home, I did an event with CENTCOM at Raymond James Stadium. So that was actually the first time I was able to see something the equivalent size. And it really was the size of a professional football stadium.
And so these things are burning just 24 hours a day, every day of the week, every day of the year, and every really conceivable type of waste and garbage and other things that they needed to dispose of were being burned, even at the largest bases, which were essentially permanent installations, as permanent as, let's say, MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa or some of these other bases around the country. Is that right? Is that an accurate description?
Oh, very much so. And actually, as an example, Balad Air Base, Baghdad International Airport, which is where we have, everybody has heard about the Green Zone, which is where it's essentially downtown Baghdad. That space, the amount of trash that humans can generate and just living, let alone, you know, having combat operations where you have things that have dangerous chemicals either in them or on them. And those facilities have been there, like the Green Zone and Balad and, you know, other ones. I'm not going to list. There's a list too long. Since 2003. So here it is, 2020. And these bases are still there. In 2009, then at the time, the commander for all of Iraq was General Petraeus. And he took the Army's environmental policy that was rudimentary before then and made it very specific identifying EPA regulations that had to be followed, including things like if you have more than 100 people on a FOB, which is a forward operating base, or they are any number of people more than 30 days, you have to have an incinerator. Well, that worked out great. It didn't. This country spent billions of dollars to buy incinerators to ship to Iraq and Afghanistan. And it was at the beginning of the big push into Afghanistan. We were supposed to be leaving Iraq, so the ground commanders there were refusing delivery. I know this because I was fighting with their people to tell them to take delivery of these very expensive incinerators that we just spent a year trying to accomplish and get them there.
Wow.
They would forward ship them over to Afghanistan, citing at that time what the administration said is, we're pulling out, we're not going to be here, we don't need them.
Lauren, let me ask you about these incinerators. These incinerators, tell us more about it, but they were basically to be used to burn all this garbage in a way that would be less hazardous, correct? Isn't that the whole point of these particular kinds of incinerators?
Yeah, they're the kind of incinerators that we actually use here inside the United States. They burn at such a temperature that, and it's it's a closed system. It doesn't, it's not sitting there spewing gas and smoke. They're closed systems, and they burn at such high temperatures that they virtually eradicate the worst of the toxins.
I see. So
they were supposed to be putting those into use immediately, and they didn't.
And even to today, there are still open burn pits in some areas. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Taji, which is in the north, Taji, Iraq, we have video and pictures from service members downrange that are sending them to us. And when I handed that off to a reporter that had a lot of work with CENTCOM, I gave it to him. I said, I have consent to share the pictures. I cannot give you the raw pictures because this guy's got 2 years left to retirement. We're not going to burn him. So he went back to CENTCOM, and CENTCOM said, oh, no, that's not ours. That's not our burn pit. That's the Iraqis. That's their burn pit. What they failed to tell anyone was that's the Iraqi burn pit that is literally right off outside the base, and they are taking our trash and burning it. That is not them burning their own garbage. That is, we are paying them to burn our garbage for it.
Wow.
Plausible deniability. We're not burning anything.
Right, right. It's the half-truth. It's the misleading half-truth. Now, Lauren, tell us about the illnesses, cancers, diseases that veterans that were returning from Iraq and Afghanistan started reporting, keeping in mind that when they went over there and they deployed, they were healthy young men and women. What were they coming back to the States with?
Well, early on, we were seeing T-cell leukemia, brain tumors. And this is going back to 07, 08, 09. Lots of severe gastrointestinal, much like the Gulf War illness, the indescribable banquet of symptoms that they couldn't pin down to any one thing. But the victims were withering away. And then all the weird cancers really started showing up. As time has worn forward, there were more and more of us, obviously, that went, more and more of us exposed. Now we're seeing things like pancreatic cancer, rare lung cancers, rare liver cancers, blood cancers. One of the, excuse the pun, but near and dear to my heart is constrictive bronchiolitis. It is a very rare disease that was first identified in the 70s by people who were working in a microwave plant the spray they used to spray inside of them to prevent the radiation from getting out gave the employees this disease.
Wow.
The EPA squashed it. OSHA said, you will never do that again, and we have it in this country. But it's okay to do it over there.
Wow.
There are thousands, tens of thousands of us now that have this disease.
Lauren, let me ask you about, I know you would help promote Greg Lovett's film, Delay, Deny, Hope, You Die, How America Poisons Its Soldiers, which was a documentary film that won some awards reporting on the open burn pits, came out a couple years ago. Now, in that film, there were some doctors that were interviewed from various university medical schools, et cetera. What was going on when these service members were coming back to the States, and then what was going on with the diagnosis, and what were the experts saying as far as the likelihood of the link, the nexus between their illnesses, particularly more unique things like the restrictive bronchiolitis and others that they believe were linked to the toxic substances?
Well, Dr. Miller, his name's Robert Miller, and he's at Vanderbilt Medical Center in Tennessee. Dr. Miller was actually contracted by the Department of Veterans Affairs very early on to study a small unit of guys, and I say guys because it was all men, that were exposed to the sulfur mine fire in Mosul, because to the man, every single one of them got sick. And Dr. Miller discovered, after, the problem is you actually can, initially anyway, you can pass routine pulmonary function tests, and you look pretty normal, except you basically can't breathe. You can't, especially on exertion, but even just sitting, you can't breathe.
And x-rays weren't picking things up either, correct?
Right. The x-rays would typically, myself included, but many of us were told, you look like you've been exposed to TB, which we were. So it wasn't a huge concern until you're getting sicker. And they started doing lung biopsies. And it is the only definitive method to prove that you have this disease, is to do the lung biopsy, and they go down and find out that basically, and my pulmonologist that did mine said, you look like you inhaled Drano.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, what does that mean? He goes, all your small airways down in the bottom of your lungs are burnt and dead. They're not going to work. And that stuff doesn't show up on an x-ray or a CAT. Mm-hmm. So people are getting sicker and sicker. And despite people getting sick, despite people dying, despite media coverage, because in 2009, or actually in 2008, I helped Dan Rather with his show, Where There's Smoke. It's actually still up. You can watch it on YouTube. You can actually go to our website and you can see it. It's in there.
What's your website, real quick? Sorry to interrupt.
It's veteran-warriors.org.
Okay. And you said you were on with Dan Rather, and what was he?
Well, I worked with Dan Rather and his production team. They got permission to go into Baghdad, and they went to Camp Victory, and they were told by public affairs, no, you cannot go see the camp trash can. And I told them, they're on a sat phone, and they're calling me, and they're like, they won't let us go. I said, well, public affairs is going to go to chow. I said, and then they're done for the night. I said, when they leave, call me, and I will give you directions how to get, because I'd only been out of there a few months. I said, I'll give you directions how to get over to camp trash can. It's not off the spot. You don't have to go outside the wire. You just go over there. He's like, oh, okay, cool. So Dan Rather's team got some really good shots. And we also worked out all the math on how many water bottles, how many pounds of water bottles and styrofoam containers were there just for the surge. We just used published numbers from the surge. Mm-hmm. The worst part is styrofoam containers and plastic water bottles, they excrete when it's burned TCE, PCBs, all these nasty, nasty, horrific chemicals that have put laws in place in this country to make it illegal to burn that crap in public, you know, out open air burn. We can't do it. You do it in your yard, you're going to go to jail. But the Army can do it. The military is allowed to do it. So what we came up with was enough pressure in 2008 and 2000 that it led to them changing their environmental policy overseas. We thought, ooh, this is a win. And then they decided, oh, we're going to issue paper, like the painter's masks, if you want them. Not mandated, not gas masks, not true air protection, because it doesn't, it's not just about breathing it. What goes up must come down. The laws of physics still work. That stuff is turned into ash, and the ash is blown, especially when you got, you know, sandstorms and just normal wind. It lands on the ground. Then it gets into the water table. It gets on the food. It's in your clothes. It's everywhere.
This is Richard Hurley. Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted you, you mentioned about the size of a football field. Describe for our listeners what the burn pit looks like looking at from the Army. I've talked to many veterans, clients of ours, and what they have told me is that when this stuff's in the air, you can't even see the sun.
No.
So describe that to our listeners.
If you've ever seen a really bad, like, tanker wreck on the highway or a warehouse fire that there's, like, solvents and or tires in it, and it's just this billowing black, gross-looking smoke, and that smell is just, you can taste it. That's how bad it is. The smell is so thick. You can taste it. And even people who are in impeccable physical condition end up with, you know, immediate respiratory distress and gastrointestinal distress and can even suffer cognitive function problems because of these are contaminants. They're not, it's not, when Mount St. Helens blew up, that was silicone ash. And even that, which was didn't have contaminants in it, made people sick. So let's add a, you know, literally a laundry list of toxic crap into a hole. It's a giant crater. It looks like it got hit by a meteor, and they scraped it all out and put a bunch of garbage in it and then spray it with JP. They don't take a 5-gallon bucket or a gas can and pour it on. They take a tanker truck that pumps fuel, and it's got like a fire hose on it, and they spray the whole mess down with JP-8, and then they ignite it.
And, it's so bad,
you burn your clothes. You have to burn your clothes when you come home. It stinks so bad.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but when I saw Greg Lovett's documentary a couple years ago, in some of the footage, the cloud of smoke, I guess because of the weather conditions at that time, it actually hung also low to the ground. It wasn't just billowing stream up straight up into the sky, but it hung like a fog for quite a large area around the base. Is that?
Well, that's part of the issue, and that's why we encourage people to. Unfortunately, there are people out there that are being told, "Well, if you didn't live within a quarter mile of or a mile of a burn pit, you weren't exposed." And that's horse hockey. Forget it. Because it was everywhere. And it gets into everything. And you can't walk from a city block without a headlight or a flashlight or something because it's like fog. It's horrible smelling. And it gets denser, and it lightens up, and it gets denser, and the worst part is it never ends. It's a daily thing. It's constant. Some days it's a little lighter because of the wind direction, And some days it's the worst because the wind changed direction is now blowing straight at you.
Now, Lauren, let me ask you, what was the reaction or what has been the reaction by agencies, including the EPA, OSHA, other government agencies, who were basically asked, you know, for the empirical evidence that had been used for decades in the United States to support the laws that you mentioned earlier. It was illegal to do this sort of open-air burning inside the United States, and yet the military is knowingly and was doing it for a long time. What have you discovered in your work?
Well, the first thing we discovered is, and I just want to make sure you guys know, you guys are here in Florida with me. We have, inside the United States, there are, at last count, which is just a couple months ago, there are 51 locations where the Department of Defense is open-air burning toxic waste. 51 locations. There's three right here in Florida.
Can you name those, or will you name those? What are the three in Florida?
Well, I don't actually have the locations. There's a link on our site to there's an organization called Ceasefire, and it actually refers to open-air burning by the military.
I see.
But their concentration has always been inside the U.S. because, as an example, there's a location in Holston, Tennessee that they are open-air burning metric tons of known carcinogenic stuff. And the EPA, we discovered, the Department of Defense was given a free pass way back decades ago to open-air burn in certain locations in the U.S., but it was supposed to be a one-time waiver. It was not supposed to be in perpetuity. It was not supposed to be carte blanche to do whatever they wanted, burn whatever they want, and to hell with the consequences. Well, as of this very moment, the CDC, I have reached out to them personally, asking them to speak at our conference last year. I asked them to even just submit basically a statement for the record for our conference. I can't get them to even open their mouth. OSHA? Nope. EPA? Nope. No one will say anything. Despite the fact that they freely admit in publication that everything that's happening, that all of these chemicals that we know for a fact, and this is not, it's not a case of, well, we had one guy that was a science teacher that was there and he knows what this stuff is. No, the Department of Defense, in its infinite wisdom, has actually been doing air quality testings in Iraq since 2003. They've also been doing some, it didn't start till later, in Afghanistan. And we've gotten the records for these. And so we can show exactly what the chemicals are. And if you tell me that butadiene, which is the chemical that is emitted when you burn tires, that's that horrible smell. If you tell me that butadiene is known to be present on a nearly daily basis for 16 years, and you're not doing anything about it, because butadiene is one of those chemicals that if you're in the same room with it or you're within immediate proximity of it, you got 30 minutes and you're dead. If you're in the same building with it, you maybe have 4 hours. So let's expose people to it every single day for a year or 15 months or 18 months. Or here, you did 5 tours, add it up.
Wow.
You've just spent about 7 years of your life breathing this garbage.
Warren, you said the DOD was actually doing some air testing. What do you say, what's the validity of that testing as far as accuracy, as far as considering any number of variables, and I'm asking that in the context of DOD's continued use of these burn pits, as well as perhaps lack of cooperation to support veterans and their disability claims?
The evidence that we've gotten a hold of, that us and actually another organization we work with called Hunter 7, that we've collectively gotten our hands on, it's pretty solid. Because the people that were tasked with doing the testing were not part of the public relations team. They weren't part of the group that says, well, there is no causal link. They don't stand around with their fingers in their ears going, no, it couldn't be. You must have had a pre-existing condition. You must have had a genetic predisposition. I love that phrase. Every human on this planet has a genetic predisposition to cancer. Except there are some cancers that you will not find unless you have a genetic marker. So when somebody gets one of those and there's no genetic marker for it in their body, and there's only one other place they could have got it, and the best example I can give people is this. Vietnam-era veterans, and I won't say exclusively that served in Vietnam, because we also have the Blue Water Navy in Guam and a bunch of other places. That era, those veterans were exposed to the rainbow chemicals. Most people only know about Agent Orange, but there were numerous chemicals. They were called the rainbow chemicals. One of the key known diseases that came out of exposure to dioxin, which is the key ingredient in Agent Orange, was this weird little disease called chloracne. Chloracne is a skin condition. It's relatively a humble little disease. It doesn't kill you. It won't maim you for life. It doesn't destroy your life. Unless you, maybe if you're a girl or a TV cat newscaster or something, because you end up with these weird lumps all over your face. And as it gets worse and progresses, they end up all over your body. But there's nothing to do with it. They can't fix it. They could take them off, but they'll just come back. But the only known cause for chloracne is dioxin exposure. And you know who says that? The VA.
Right.
Here's the worst part. You are automatically, the VA, for your listeners who don't know how this works, they have what's called presumptive diseases. Meaning, we presume that you contracted it because you were exposed to this. With the case of Agent Orange, there are quite a few presumptives. Chloracne is one of them. That if you served in the Vietnam and surrounds, and you have chloracne, you're automatically rated for it.
Right.
And in some cases, you know, there's surgeries involved, and you have to get the things removed and stuff. So it does matter. Here's the funny part. Walk in, have a post 9/11 veteran walk in the door and has chloracne. They wrote, nope. Sorry, you must have ate a lot of chocolate when you were a kid. Maybe you licked lead paint. They refused to grant that same presumptive for that disease that they acknowledge the only known cause is dioxin exposure. And we do not have high levels of dioxin exposure inside the U.S. except in very explicit situations. And those are heavily monitored by OSHA, and the employees that are exposed to that stuff, they're in hazmat suits. So it's not happening here.
Lauren,
so that's the logic we're living with.
If I could jump in here, we've been talking about the veterans' exposure to the burn pits and all the hazardous chemicals, et cetera, and the medical conditions that they're facing. What about the civilian population? I mean, we went in there and created all this mess, and we've left it there. And I have to think that just like in Guam, that has a higher rate of cancers than mainland United States, that what we left in Iraq and Afghanistan is just really the effect on the civilian population must be horrendous.
Well, Richard, it's so funny you even bring that up. So many people over the last 10 years have asked me, well, what is the problem? Why won't the Department of Defense and then obviously following on the VA. Just admit this. Why is this so hard? Because, and I actually had to go back and check, 6 years ago, a representative of the country of Iraq contacted my organization. They asked our organization to help them sign on to the case against KBR for the contamination.
KBR being one of the major defense contractor that was in charge of these, of operating the burn pits, is that correct?
Yeah, they handled for decades. They had all the logistics contracts, literally beans to blankets, including waste disposal.
Okay.
So the country of Iraq wanted us to help them get into the suit. I told them I didn't even know if that would be possible. I gave them the name of our attorney, Susan Burke. She's actually in that movie you were referencing earlier. So a couple years go by. Well, 2 years ago when we got kicked out for the last time. Thank you, Judge Titus. I hope you retire peacefully. Got kicked out of court, granting KBR sovereign immunity that the government gets, but other contractors don't. That I talked to Susan at length about this, and she said that 2 years after they came to us, the country of Iraq came to her and asked her to represent them at the World Court to sue the United States for contaminating their country.
Wow.
So now the big question, the $64 million question, why won't the DOD do anything? The minute they acknowledge what they have done and what they continue to do, they do so publicly, we are going to be paying reparations to Iraq, Afghanistan, Horn of Africa, Syria, Kuwait, we will bankrupt our nation. It will be to eternity. We will be paying these countries to eternity. And if anybody has any doubt about that, I have a problem with schedules now, but a few months ago, very quietly, a little story hit the media where we were going back into Korea to Korea and giving them money to clean up one of the Superfund site we made. And we did this nice and quietly and paid them a big fat chunk of money.
Wow.
Like more zeros than any of us will ever see in our life. That's
yeah, certainly money is a big issue, and I suspect it's also behind the VA. Now, you mentioned before about, in comparison to the Agent Orange exposure, Vietnam veterans, and the VA has had, or still does, they have a presumptive list that if a veteran contracts any of the diseases or cancers on the list, the VA will presume it was due to exposure to Agent Orange. Why isn't there a similar presumptive list now? Because now we're in the year 2020 already. And in addition to why isn't there such a list, can you tell us what efforts are underway in Congress to try to get to the point where there is a presumptive list so all our veterans don't have to go to the trouble of having to hire their own expert witnesses, expert doctors, et cetera, to prove that their particular type of lung disease or other cancer was caused due to exposure to the contaminants. Tell us, if you could, about the status of any presumptive list or the legislation.
Well, it's going to be a two-part answer. First off,
okay.
There are several pieces of legislation right now in Congress. I've actually read most of them because of what I'm going to tell you in the second part. 99% of them are what we categorize as palliative legislation. They will make people feel good, but they won't fix anything. Because all of the bills, except for Congressman Bill Rox's bill, order the VA to do something like do testing and do more research and things like to open up the registry to allow family members of those who died from their diseases to add that name to the registry. First and foremost, the Burn Pit Registry, which myself and several others, about a dozen of us, lobbied for years to get that, and then the VA built it broken. 3 years ago, the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine issued a scathing report that it took them a year to study that registry. And the key recommendation, the key takeaway was, dear Mr. Secretary, write a check to a third-party company that actually knows how to build a database and have them fix it. No one can pull any data out of there. Nothing useful. They can pull names. That's about it. Names and geographic locations. They cannot pull.
So this registry really isn't helping any veterans who have filed disability claims.
It doesn't help at all because rating examiners cannot see the registry at all. And the medical providers, all they can see is that you checked a box. There's a box on the main screen when they pull your account up when you go to visit them. And there's boxes, you know, Vietnam, Korea,
right.
Medal of Honor, you know, POW, and Burn Pit Registry. And it's just a little box. They don't know squat. They can't see your answers. They don't know what you've listed as what you were exposed to.
I see.
The first part is, not a single bill, and I'm working with the congressman to try it. We want this. We tried asking nicely, and that got us nowhere because he actually didn't even bother to answer. So now we have to push for a bill to force the VA to fix that so that that data can be useful. That said, the legislation, here's our contention. I say this as veteran warriors. Veteran warriors' contention is that we have not an exhaustive list, but we have a pretty comprehensive list of the chemicals that have been known to have been found in these locations. What we want is for that list to be handed off to the National Academy with an instruction of compile a list, weighted list by most often, most occurring, whatever, of diseases associated with those chemicals. That list goes back to Congress after this law takes place, and Congress then will hand it to the VA and say, here, the top 10 or the top 20 are going to be your list of presumptives to start with. Because right now we have about 2 million plus OIF, OEF veterans that have just started getting sick. Just started. People are just now starting to get sick. That's why we're getting more publicity about this.
I wonder why, you know, we've got, in both the House and the Senate, we have Veteran Affairs committees that, relative to the rest of what's going on in the country, they tend to work a little bit more in a bipartisan fashion. I wonder why they haven't taken on this issue like they did the Camp Lejeune issue, you know, back in 2010, around there. They actually passed a statute that created a statutory list for the Camp Lejeune toxic, you know, contaminated water for medical purposes, for healthcare purposes. Now, they kind of punted to the VA to create a presumptive list, and it took the VA a number of years to do that, a presumptive list for disability claims. But I'm wondering, you know, why can't we get Congress, the Veteran Affairs Committee, to do the work that they're paid to do, which is hold hearings, create by statute at least a starting point, like you say. Let's start with the most likely diseases and illnesses and cancers from these exposures and work off of EPA and OSHA and other research over decades. And then just create...
You are literally repeating everything that has come out of my mouth for the last 10 years.
Okay.
And about once a month now it comes out of my mouth because I have to repeat this to people. Like, we have EPA and OSHA and CDC and WHO and NIS and NIM and, you know, literally thousands of research facilities around the world the evidence is there. So if one more DOD, and I don't care if it's a five-star, stands in front of me and says, there's no causal link, I'm going to drop a tire in the middle of the Joint Chief's office, light that sucker on fire, and tell him, sorry, door's locked. You don't get to leave. Oh, what? You're going to die from this? Yeah, guess what? So believe me when I tell you, this is exactly what we want. We are having a lot of problems. Every single veteran service organization, the official ones, and many members of Congress, they listen to the drink and the Kool-Aid. You know, VA says, we need more research. And, of course, then you have these members of Congress that will stand up and go, oh, my God, we just have to give them more money for research. That's the problem. They need to research this more. Because they throw up, this is so infuriating, they throw in Congress's face. Well, you know, we're just seeing now the effects of what's happened to the guys from, you know, Vietnam. No. You're just now being forced into court to acknowledge it because they've been sick all along. Our generation, our wars, we are sicker sooner, way earlier, and way more severely. And I don't mean any disrespect to my Vietnam era brothers and sisters. I just mean these are facts. These are medical facts. When you come home, I was not home 4 months. And I fell out of my first run. First time I'd fallen out of a run in my entire life. Never fell out of a run before.
Yeah,
we have people that
film.
Are home less than a year and dead in the ground less than a year from the time they get home. That's the accelerated rate of onset of these diseases. It behooves Congress, and I mean both the House and the Senate Committees on Veterans Affairs, to grind this to a screeching halt and say, stop. Because here's the kicker. When you mention Camp Lejeune, every time somebody mentions it, my skin crawls. Because Camp Lejeune, it became known what happened at Camp Lejeune because he is now in private practice. His name is Kerry Baker. He's another attorney. He handles exclusively burn pickle. He's the guy that was the policy advisor that wrote that policy that was issued April 26th of 2010, in which the VA was instructing all of its rating examiners on how to handle claims for Camp Lejeune, also at Tsugi Japan, because they have the exact same water contamination problem there. And the first 9 pages of this 26-page policy are about the burn pit. So somebody sat in a back room, and I probably know exactly which person and which room it was, and picked apart that policy because you had to go 10 pages down to find Camp Lejeune because Camp Lejeune moved at light speed.
Yes, it did.
Unheard of, historically unheard of moved legislation.
Yeah.
We are 11 years into this fight. And there are many of us who are not going to live to see the end of it. But I promise you, there are going to be people in Washington that are never going to forget me, if nothing else, because they're throwing darts at my face on the wall. Because I'm never going to stop this until we get, and I say we, meaning every single service member, veteran, and their children. Because, by the way, there's the next little joy that keeps on giving. We have veterans who have gone overseas, 1, 2 tours, 3 tours, 7 tours, come home, and then procreate. And you know what we're seeing now? Children with rare cancers. And dad's only 30.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like, you know, the Vietnam-era kids who the children are in their 40s that are, you know, having medical issues. These are, I'm talking a 7-year-old girl with brain cancer, a cancer so rare that 5 different, including Duke Medical Center and another place in England, 5 different research facilities could not identify this cancer. How about autism screaming to the top for military who have been deployed, their children? Major birth defects.
Wow.
You can't continue to get away with this.
you know, there's a lot of information that needs to get out there, and I thank you so much for sharing that. But, Lauren, what can listeners do? What do you recommend they do as far as contacting their representative in the House of Representatives, their two U.S. senators? How can they support your group, Veteran Warriors? How can they basically get more involved to help in this issue?
First and foremost, definitely. You can. We actually have some template letters. You can send us a contact request through our website at veteran-warriors.org, and we will be happy to send you one for your House of Representatives representative or your senator or both. We recommend doing both. Demand, number one, that the Department of Defense, both inside the U.S. and OCONUS, cease immediately open-air burning. Number two, that they cease. They put an end to the no causal link and denying health care and benefits to those of us who have, and I don't want to get into that the falsified hero worship garbage. You know, we volunteered. I volunteered. We all volunteered to join the military. But none of us volunteered to go over there and be guinea pigs to see how long we could survive after they basically gas us. So force them to tell DOD, no more, you're done. You will take care of your service members. Tell the VA, no more research. You can research on how to cure us, but don't tell everybody you need research to find out what's wrong with us.
Right, right, right. So contacting their representative, their two U.S. senators, how can they support your group and get involved in other ways? Any thoughts on that?
Most definitely, we are always looking for more members. We don't charge anything for any of our services. We don't charge membership fees. You can. We have a public Facebook page. We have a Twitter. We have two private groups, one of which is solely relating to VA issues. The other is solely relating to burn pits, which is now toxic exposures because PFAS, which is stuff in the firefighting foam, which is not exclusive to firefighting foam, and contaminated water, and, you know, the military is the biggest polluter in the world, and everybody just keeps giving them a pass. So that's what we're dealing with, and we're fighting for people to get the benefit, and especially the medical care when you have a rare disease is incredibly expensive. You can't imagine it, especially if it's your child or your spouse. It's not you. That's the hard part to deal with. And we actually are putting together resources with Congressman Bill Arrakis, who's on a special caucus for rare diseases, because some of these things are incredibly rare, and we're not getting help from the military or the VA. They can reach out to us. We're happy to. We love to provide referrals to other organizations that are hand-selected to help them. Right. And worst-case scenario, I have no shame. I have no problem calling the VA out very publicly.
Well, Lauren, we're about out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. And one more time, what is your organization's website?
Veteran-warriors.org. And they're welcome to come there. We do accept donations. That is our only source of income. So if the feeling moves you, we'd appreciate it. Thank you, David and Rick. I really appreciate the time.
Well, thank you,
Lauren,
for being on our show again. I'd like to invite you back again periodically so you can keep our listeners updated on your great work. Thanks again, Lauren.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Well, Rick, we're about out of time. It's an issue that we're going to continue to follow. It's one of great importance to veterans and their families in the country. So we got about a minute left, Rick. If you want to do like a quick,
yeah, the coaching and the care, it helps veterans transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment. Loved ones can help. Coaching and the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Friday to Friday 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Or Monday through Friday, I'm sorry. Again, the VA's Coaching and Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a veteran crisis line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, that number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. Also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on BBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.